Yeah, we got Isaac here in the After Dark, where the magic happens.
Yeah,
this is you know, you sell the sizzle, but you eat the steak, and this is the steak for our Patreon.
Your voice
patrons.
Has already changed. Your voice has changed.
Yeah, it does.
More relaxed. After Dark. It's a creepy voice.
You can't tell. You can't tell I'm not wearing pants anymore. I was wearing pants.
Yeah, this
in the free
is crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Hey, kid, come here. Give me some of that Patreon money. I've heard. There's some teal bucks hiding here somewhere. Let's go to the back room with me, kid. That's where we got the good shit. We got the Bukowski. This is going to be fun. Let's go for 20 and 30 minutes, 20, 30 minutes or so, and talk about more Bukowski and then also, I think, the poetry.
Yeah.
Do you want to be the leadoff man, Isaac, and read your favorite Bukowski poem?
Oh, ever? Well, I have a few here.
You want to read the Shoeshine Man? I'm going to read
The Shoeshine Man, that one's so in. I'll read a real short one to start. Okay. Is that okay?
Right. Yeah.
So, I'm going to read this one is I share this one all the time because this is the best poem ever about, you know, how people a lot of times say, like, man, I'm just going to, once I get my new iPhone, I'm really going to start writing because it has this app on it or that app on it, or like, oh, once I get like a new apartment, then I'm really just going to dedicate myself to this or that. So this is the best poem ever about people who say that, you know? And it's called, and I use this example all the time. Like people who work for me, like if they ever say like, but I just need the new, I need the new SaaS program in order to like properly do my job. I send them this poem. It's like only like 10 lines. It's called Air and Light and Time and Space by Charles Bukowski. And it starts in quotes. So, you know, I've either had a family, a job, something has always been in the way, but now I've sold my house. I've found this place, a large studio. You should see the space and the light. For the first time in my life, I'm going to have a place and time and the time to create. No, baby, if you're going to create, you're going to create whether you work 16 hours a day in a coal mine or you're going to create in a small room with three children while you're on welfare. You're going to create with part of your mind and your body blown away. You're going to create blind, crippled, demented. You're going to create with a cat crawling up your back while the whole city trembles in earthquake, bombardment, flood, and fire. Baby, air and light and time and space have nothing to do with it. And don't create anything except maybe a longer life to find new excuses for.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Shots fired.
And fucking true. I'll finish that novel after Crypto Moons and I'm finally free, right?
Then I'll do it.
Nope, never gonna happen. Yeah, that rocks. I mean, and as a writer, there's just something about, because I do a lot of would-be screenwriting, right? It hasn't really made its way to the screen yet, but, and I have a writing partner, and we work, and she's a director. She was on the Bolaño episode, and we, for years, have written, on average, 4 hours a day. 2 days a week total. I'm overstating it. Let me rephrase that.
No, you don't.
We've written 4 hours a week, 2 hours twice a week. That's our average. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I apologize for it's the After Dark. You're on Patreon. You know, we love you. Thank you. My point is that's all it takes. And we just do it twice a week consistently. We keep each other honest and we're able to knock out we're good for about one feature screenplay a year working like that. And that's around her crazy, insane schedule, my crazy, insane schedule, kids and family and work and everything. Yeah, that's just a long way of saying no excuses. And if you're working on the novel and you don't have, if you can't write 4 hours a day,
yeah,
I bet you can find 4 hours a week and do something, anything.
Oh, yeah. And 15 minutes is actually infinite more time than zero. So
totally. Dude, Ernst Younger has a great thing where I know you guys did an episode on Younger. Mm-hmm. Ernst Younger has a great thing where I heard on your podcast. He says, I could do all the writing I need to do in an hour a day. You know, if I have no distractions, that's more than enough for me to do everything I need to do.
If you're a talented writer and you can't, and you have found your voice and you know what you're working on and you can't write a page in an hour.
Yeah.
What does that add up to in a year? Yeah, and what if two thirds of those are good? You've got a draft of a novel, right? You've got the start. Anyway, it's the willpower to sit at that fucking blank page. And, you know, for my purposes, for the screenwriting, it's really helpful to have somebody else.
You need your screenplays out here, Kevin. Where's your screenplays at? You got to send them to me. This is why
I have my LA friends. Okay, good. I'll send you some screenplays then. No, I know if you're ever really serious about that, let me know.
I'm absolutely serious, Kevin. Really? I've never read. You got to send me your screenplays.
Okay, I'll send you. I'll send you a couple of screenplays. We've got we actually have a meeting on Friday with a producer about Pickleball because Pickleball's hot. We've written a screenplay about boomers and millennials that don't get along. It's called Pickleball.
You could sell that.
That's what I'm talking about. Good. Okay. So I believe I have your email address. You'll be suffering through two of my screenplays very soon. In any case, And I think we probably have a lot of artists who, you know, support this podcast. Like for this Patreon, I get the impression, you know, that we do. And whether you're an artist or it's just in your career or whatever, man, oh man, yeah, your excuses are your own for sure. It's a bitter pill. Yeah. If I just had half the time back that I burned on that bird website, I could have written the great American novel. Let's be honest. Yeah. Or at least I could have like tried to. Yeah. You know, so
this sounds a little maybe serious and maybe like overly serious and maybe even kind of pretentious. But the last time that like a young person asked me about writing advice, I told them decide what in your life you're going to give up because you got to give up something. Yeah,
that's
like so it doesn't have to be love. It doesn't have to be, you know, but you have to give up something. Something's got to go to make room for this.
Right. And Brad clearly gave up the gym.
Yeah.
And he's really been letting himself go. You can't see on
that's right.
On the after.
I gave up. I don't have to do anything with my hair. That saved me.
That's actually not that
day.
Yeah, that's actually that compounds. Right. I'm going to read this poem that is pretty dark from Bukowski. It's called Let It Enfold You. Either peace or happiness, let it enfold you. When I was a young man, I felt these things were dumb, unsophisticated. I had bad blood, a twisted mind, a precarious upbringing. I was hard as granite. I leered at the sun. I trusted no man and especially no woman. I was living a hell in small rooms. I broke things, smashed things, walked through glass, cursed. I challenged everything. I was continually being evicted, jailed, in and out of fights, in and out of my mind. Women were something to screw and rail at. I had no male friends. I changed jobs and cities. I hated holidays, babies, history, newspapers, museums, grandmothers, marriage, movies, spiders, garbage men, English accents, Spain, France, Italy, walnuts, and the color orange. Algebra angered me. Opera sickened me. Charlie Chaplin was a fake, and flowers were for pansies. Peace and happiness to me were signs of inferiority, tenants of the weak and addled mind. But as I went on with my alley fights, my suicidal years, my passage through any number of women, it gradually began to occur to me that I wasn't different from the others. I was the same. They were all fulsome with hatred, glossed over with petty grievances. The men I fought in alleys had hearts of stone. Everybody was nudging, inching, cheating for some insignificant advantage. The lie was the weapon and the plot was empty. Darkness was the dictator. Cautiously, I allowed myself to feel good at times. I found moments of peace in cheap rooms, just staring at the knobs of some dresser or listening to the rain in the dark. The less I needed, the better I felt. Maybe the other life had worn me down. I no longer found glamour in topping somebody in conversation or in mounting the body of some poor drunken female whose life had slipped away into sorrow. I could never accept life as it was. I could never gobble down all its poisons, but there were parts, tenuous magic parts, open for the asking. I reformulated. I don't know when, date, time, all that, but the change occurred. Something in me relaxed, smoothed out. I no longer had to prove that I was a man. I didn't have to prove anything. I began to see things, coffee cups lined up behind a counter in a cafe, or a dog walking along a sidewalk, or the way the mouse on my dresser top stopped there with its body, its ears, its nose. It was fixed, a bit of life caught within itself, and its eyes looked at me, and they were beautiful. Then it was gone. I began to feel good. I began to feel good in the worst situations, and there were plenty of those, like, say, the boss behind his desk. He is going to have to fire me. I've missed too many days. He is dressed in a suit, necktie, glasses. He says, I am going to have to let you go. It's all right, I tell him. He must do what he must do. He has a wife, a house, children, expenses, most probably a girlfriend. I am sorry for him. He is caught. I walk onto the blazing sunshine. The whole day is mine temporarily anyhow. The whole world is at the throat of the world. Everybody feels angry, shortchanged, cheated. Everybody is despondent, disillusioned. I welcomed shots of peace, tattered shards of happiness. I embraced that stuff like the hottest number, like high heels, breasts, singing the works. Don't get me wrong. There is such a thing as cockeyed optimism that overlooks all basic problems just for the sake of itself. This is a shield and a sickness. The knife got near my throat again. I almost turned on the gas again. But when the good moments arrived again, I didn't fight them off like an alley adversary. I let them take me. I luxuriated in them. I made them welcome home. I even looked into the mirror, once having thought myself to be ugly. I now liked what I saw. Almost handsome, yes. A bit ripped and ragged. Scars, lumps, odd turns, but all in all, not too bad. Almost handsome. Better at least than some of those movie star faces, like the cheeks of babies' butts. I finally discovered real feelings of others, unheralded, like lately, like this morning, as I was leaving for the track. I saw my wife in bed, just the shape of her head there, not forgetting centuries of the living and the dead and the dying, the pyramids, Mozart dead, but his music still there in the room, weeds growing, the earth turning, the tote board waiting for me. I saw the shape of my wife's head. She so still, I ached for her life, just being there under the covers. I kissed her on the forehead, got down the stairway, got outside, got into my marvelous car, fixed the seatbelt, backed out the drive, feeling warm to the fingertips, down to my foot, on the gas pedal. I entered the world once more, drove down the hill, past the houses full of empty people. I saw the mailman honked. He waved back at me.
I don't know why you call it dark. That's not a dark poem at all. That's like,
yeah, it turns around. Yeah, it turns around. Well, it's dark where he's talking about the suicide and everything, but you're right. Yeah, it is. It's a lovely poem in the end, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude,
he made it.
Yeah. Right. Well, exactly. He figured out why life was worth living in a way, you know what I mean? I think this is what he really stands for, is like, there's really nothing to be afraid of, I think. You know, I mean, like that's what, as long as you have a good attitude about what you're seeing and what you're doing, like, really, at least in America today, I think there's also this like pedestrianness in his poems. You know, it's like, as much as a non-communist, I disagree with the idea that everything is beautiful, right? I don't agree with that idea. It's still like he can find beauty in the simplest of situations. And as long as we're not being literally, you know, in a concentration camp, but even then, Viktor Frankl, you know, Man's Search for Meaning, he's having a great time in the concentration camp. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, Yeah, I guess the point is, like, no matter what situation you're in, if you have the correct viewpoint of what you're doing, like, you can have a beautiful time no matter what's going on in this life, you know? And I think that that's really what Bukowski stands for.
It's a nice poem too, because it shows you that journey from that being a bitter young man, which I think a lot of, I mean, certainly not me. I've always been like a golden retriever boyfriend, as they say. I've always been very cheerful.
I heard that was bad though.
Wait, oh it is?
I think the current discourse on x.com is that that's bad.
Is golden retriever's bad?
I can't keep up with this shit.
So we want BoJack Horseman boyfriends, not Mr. Peanut Butter boyfriends now. Okay, great.
Yeah, I think so.
You can update us on, you can write back. You're on Patreon right now. You can write to us and let us know what type of, in any case. That's such a fun poem, because it's relatable, but it's also wise. And there might be a young man or a young woman, a young person out there who reads that, and it points in a direction, doesn't it? That is not mystical necessarily, but true, with a capital T, true. Like, it's you, buddy. It's you, pal. You know, and even, you know, and his myth making, he waves at the mailman and the mailman waves back. And his bitterest years were those mail years. You know, and I think he's reflecting back on his life a little bit too, and going, I could have been that mailman. Like, I could have probably approached this differently. I don't know that he didn't carry so much, but he was an assist, like a substitute carrier at one point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, totally.
All right. Give us another one, Isaac. Well, that was a long one.
All right. I have two more. One is one for the shoe shine man. The other one, though, this one's a little bit more negative, but this is also very short. And this is a kind of a famous one that I also think about all the time. This one's called The Genius of the Crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And unfortunately, the way he's written this, it's clearly that he's utterly wasted. Like, it's clear that when he writes this poem, he's completely trash. Like, this is a poem you write like blackout drunk at, you know, very late at night. And there's all kinds of weird capitalization. Like, you know, like nothing, like the words are hanging off the thing, you know, which is another thing we actually didn't talk about. He does a lot of seemingly like random word, putting it on the line below, you know, like he'll have two and then on the line below. And I really think that's a function of him just being drunk all the time, because it's like, he just like, he presses the button and like, and then the thought comes in after. But this is very much one of these poems, and it's called The Genius of the Crowd. Okay. There is enough treachery, hatred, violence, absurdity in the average human being to supply any given army on any given day. And the best at murder, and the best at murder is like capitalized, like the title of like it's like a title. I don't know why. But and the best at murder are those who preach against it. And the best at hate are those who preach love. And the best at war, finally, are those who preach peace. Those who preach God need God. Those who preach peace do not have peace. Those who preach love do not have love. Beware the preachers, beware the knowers. Beware those who are always reading books. Beware those who either detest poverty or are proud of it. But beware those who praise, for they need praise in return. Beware those who are quick to censure. They are afraid of what they do not know. Beware those who seek constant crowds. They are nothing alone. Beware the average man, the average woman. Beware their love. Their love is average, seeks average, but there is genius in their hatred. There is enough genius in their hatred to kill you, to kill anybody. Not wanting solitude, not understanding solitude, they will attempt to destroy anything that differs from their own. Not being able to create art, they will not understand art. They will consider their failure as creators only as a failure of the world. Not being able to love fully, they will believe your love incomplete, and they will hate you. And their hatred will be perfect, like a shining diamond, like a knife, like a mountain, like a tiger, like hemlock. their finest art. Mm.
That is that truly a great and inspired poem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very Nietzschean. Very Nietzschean. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have one that's maybe a little more obscure and shorter that talks to this. It's called The Pack.
Oh, that sounds similar. Sounds like a similar idea.
Yeah. The dogs are at it again. They leap and tear, back off, circle, then attack again. And I had thought this was over. I had thought that they had forgotten. Now there are only more of them. And I am older now, but the dogs are ageless. And as always, they tear not only at the flesh, but also at the mind and the spirit. Now they are circling me in this room. They are not beautiful. They are the dogs from hell. And they will find you too, even though you are one of them now. Is he talking about
what's
the reader?
What's that called?
The pack.
The pack.
The pack. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
I've never heard that one.
That's from The Last Night of the Earth poems.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Very cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I have. Go ahead, Brad.
Let me read one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's Brad's turn. Brad, sorry.
Yeah, we promised it on the Patreon for the Patreon people. So
right. But, we are. I'd forgotten. We got to hear Brad's. Is this your favorite Bukowski?
I had three of them teed up. And as you were going, I was like, kind of fits? Dinosauria,
read all three. I got
they're long. They're all long ones. Okay. Dinosauria, born like this, into this, as the chalk faces smile, as Mrs. Death laughs, as the elevators break, as political landscapes dissolve, as the supermarket bag boy holds a college degree, as the oily fish spit out their oily prey, as the sun is masked, we are born like this, into this, into these carefully mad wars, into the sight of broken factory windows of emptiness, into bars where people no longer speak to each other. Into fistfights that end as shootings and knifings. Born into this, into hospitals which are so expensive that it's cheaper to die, into lawyers who charge so much it's cheaper to plead guilty, into a country where the jails are full and the madhouses closed, into a place where the masses elevate fools into rich heroes. Born into this, walking and living through this, dying because of this, muted because of this, castrated, debauched, disinherited because of this, fooled by this, used by this, pissed on by this, made crazy and sick by this, made violent, made inhuman by this. The heart is blackened, the fingers reach for the throat, the gun, the knife, the bomb. The fingers reach toward an unresponsive God. The fingers reach for the bottle, the pill, the powder. We are born into this sorrowful deadliness. We are born into a government 60 years in debt that soon will be unable to even pay the interest on that debt, and the banks will burn. Money will be useless. There will be open and unpunished murder in the streets. It will be guns and roving mobs. Land will be useless. Food will become a diminishing return. Nuclear power will be taken over by the many. Explosions will continually shake the earth. Radiated men will stalk each other. The rich and the chosen will watch from space platforms. Dante's Inferno will be made to look like a children's playground. The sun will not be seen and will always be night. Trees will die. All vegetation will die. Radiated men will eat the flesh of radiated men. The sea will be poisoned. The lakes and rivers will vanish. Rain will be the new gold. The rotting bodies of men and animals will stink in the dark wind. The last few survivors will be overtaken by new and hideous diseases, and the space platforms will be destroyed by attrition, the petering out of supplies, the natural effect of general decay, and there will be the most beautiful silence never heard. Born out of that, the sun still hidden there, awaiting the next chapter.
It's so gnarly.
It's hard on that one, man.
It goes so hard.
Yeah, it is really hard. Yeah,
like a little poem, and then it becomes this like post-apocalyptic fever dream.
It keeps going. Keeps going. Yeah.
One thing I also noticed is he talks about Mrs. Death a lot. He has another great one called The Creative Act that ends with this life dancing in front of Mrs. Death. I had to Google it immediately because that's like something he keeps doing.
Yeah, I wonder he attributes just attributing the feminine to that. That seems that's very curious. Yeah.
Well, Isaac, thank you for making our 100th episode complete with your presence. Really, I don't want to get too sentimental about it, but it does. It means a lot to us. I mean, Brad and I started this in what year was it, Brad?
2021.
2021. And here we
are. 2.5-ish years. Yeah.
So is this the 100th? Like,
total.
Are you counting? So, like, dark rooms are like a, like,
yeah. Yeah,
times
yeah,
they right?
It's they like, count. Yeah, so
they count.
Core episodes and dark rooms. Yeah,
so yeah. And then we 50. Did a, you're at 50 in terms of people.
I think we
I
are.
I would
yeah.
say fifth, more than 55, four, something. Yeah, we're in the 50s on people. Yeah, yeah. We haven't had a dark room for everybody, and some people have had more than one dark room. So, yeah,
awesome.
But, yeah, 100
fun. Well, you're gonna bring us the closer. You, Isaac, right. you got to well, do the Shoeshine
now
Man.
Now I don't know if I should read Shoeshine Man or if I should read this Creative Act poem.
How long is the Creative Act
poem? The Creative Act poem is very short. And the I shouldn't read both, but I'll
yes, read them both. Start with the Creative Act and then go really? Right on. Yeah, do it.
Why not?
Okay, this is our show. We can do whatever we want.
That's right.
All right. This one's called The Creative Act. You guys will appreciate this one. And like, I feel like this is just an important one. But I, you know, so it goes for the broken egg on the floor, for the 5th of July, for the fish in the tank, for the old man in room 9, for the cat on the fence, for your for yourself, not for fame, not for money. You've got to keep chopping. As you get older, the glamour recedes. It's easier when you're young. Anybody can rise from the heights now and then. The buzzword is consistency. Anything that keeps it going. This life dancing in front of Mrs. Death. That's the creative act.
That's what I was saying earlier. 4 hours a week, you know,
you gotta keep on chopping, 2 hour
sessions. Just do it. You've got no excuse. You can definitely squeeze out 5 hours for your creative passion a week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you can't, well, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. Stop.
Basically the 4-hour work week. If you've read the 4-hour work week, you know,
it's that easy. It's that easy, people. Yeah. It's that easy. Maybe shave your hair like Brad. And you
just save minutes a day.
You'll
minutes
forget three. Yeah. All
yeah.
Right.
You know, there's do you guys ever remember in Girls season 1 where Lena Dunham goes just like, I've decided there's more important things than my body. And it's like, damn, like that's kind of badass. Like you really did, you know. Yeah. But then she didn't make anything good after that. So it's like,
if you're gonna sacrifice something,
what did you sacrifice? All right, fine. All right, I'm gonna run for the show time. We're not reading Bluebird, but people can enjoy that on their own.
That's
It's not that long, but it is like a little, it's going to take a little time. So I'm just
going to
do it. All right.
That's what we're here for.
Okay. I'll try and go fast. All right. This is one for the Shoeshine Man. The balance is preserved by the snails climbing the Santa Monica cliffs. The luck is walking down Western Avenue and having the girls in the massage parlor holler at you. Hello, sweetie. The miracle is having 5 women in love with you at the age of 55, and the goodness is that you were only able to love one of them. The gift is having a daughter more gentle than you are, whose laughter is finer than yours. The peace comes from driving a blue 1967 Volks through the streets like a teenager, radio tuned to the host who loves you most, feeling the sun, feeling the solid hum of the rebuilt motor as you needle through traffic. The grace is being able to love rock music, symphony music, jazz, anything that contains the original energy of joy. And the probability that returns is the deep blue low, yourself flat upon yourself within the guillotine walls, angry at the sound of the phone or anybody's footsteps passing. But the other probability, the lilting high that always follows, makes the girl at the check stand in the supermarket look like Marilyn, like Jackie before they got her Harvard lover. Like the girl in high school that we all followed home. There is that which helps you believe in something besides death. Somebody in a car approaching on a street too narrow. Sorry, somebody in a car approaching on a street too narrow, and he or she pulls aside. Or the old fighter BoJack, shining shoes, after blowing the entire bankroll on parties, on women, on parasites, humming, breathing on the leather, working the rag, looking up and saying, "What the hell? I had it for a while. That beats the other. I am bitter sometimes, but the taste has often been sweet. It's only that I feared to say it. It's like when your woman says, 'Tell me you love me,' and you can't. If you see me grinning from my blue Volks, running a yellow light, driving straight into the sun, I will be locked in the arms of a crazy life. Thinking of trapeze artists, of midgets with big cigars, of a Russian winter in the early 40s, of Chopin with his bag of Polish soil, of an old waitress bringing me an extra cup of coffee and laughing as she does so. The best of you I like more than you think. The others don't count, except that they have fingers and heads and some of them eyes and most of them legs and all of them good and bad dreams and a way to go. Justice is everywhere and it's working. And the machine guns and the frogs and the hedges will tell you so."
Wow. I'd never read that one before. That's great.
Yeah, locked in the arms of a crazy life.
Locked in the arms of a crazy. That's what "Locked in the Arms of a Crazy Life" comes from, which I think is his. Is that his biography or autobiography or something?
Yeah, I think there is, one of the biographies. Yeah, uses that title. It's very.
If I was ever
going
to get a tattoo, it would be that.
Is that right? Interesting. I like
"Locked in the Arms of a Crazy Life."
Awesome. I like the one I liked a lot of things about that. I was kind of reading along as you went. There's something really touching about this. "The best of you I like more than you think," which is just like, because he's kind of this, his persona is sort of this curmudgeonly asshole. But there's something like, there's just this moment of like, by the way, I actually do like you guys. I just think that's really a beautiful sentiment. Yeah. I feel like that sometimes on Twitter. I'm sort of like, I really like about 75 of you. I really, really do. Yeah.
You can follow us at Art of Dark Pod on Twitter if you don't already. I'm sure Brad will like you. We like our Patreon supporters. Yeah. Isaac, I meant what I said. There's an open door. You ever want to come on, do a dark room? Anybody would cover it. Let us know.
Man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for making episode 100 a certified banger.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Absolutely, man.